CliffCentral.com.
Yes, it is a Tuesday morning, CliffCentral.com, the 21st of January. And I hope your day is off to an awesome start this morning. We are here, we are live, and you can get hold of us, 079-748-2090. If you want to chat about some stuff, whatever's on your mind this morning, send us a message, whatever you prefer. Okay, so where do we begin? Good morning, Pumelele. Good morning, Sia. Good morning, Bulelo. And good morning to you.
Sorry, just quickly, that song you played.
Yes, the Gorillaz.
It just reminded me of how cool they are.
Oh, you like them?
I think they're living their best life. Them and Daft Punk. They come out to release new music. They have fun. They make money. But we don't really know them. You could be walking down the street past a Gorillaz member.
Well, isn't it Damon Albarn from Blur? I think we do, but
we
obviously...
We do.
No, but as in like, they're not as identifiable Paul McCartney.
Sure.
You know? So, sorry, that's an arbitrary example to make, right?
Yeah, well, so it's fair enough.
Yeah, you true. Know?
Paul McCartney.
I think it would be very cool to be someone who is tremendously successful, famous, wealthy, that people admire, and they don't know who you are. I think that must be like a superpower. That's almost like being Superman hiding in Clark Kent's clothes.
Mm.
In Clark Kent's glasses.
Yeah.
There's a bit of it that I see or I admire in like authors as well. A lot of us may know popular authors, bar like a J.K. Rowling or whatever, but you might recognize the name, like Wilbur Smith.
Yeah, but you wouldn't know him.
You probably don't really...
If he was at the checkout in the shop near you, you know?
Yeah.
At the till, you're busy paying and someone loses their mind and then you're standing right next to Wilbur Smith or Steve King or, you know, one of those Stephen King.
I think people who are professionals in many, many other industries are like that.
What do you mean?
So... famous architects, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you know them, you know the name, you know the face, but when you see it in a crowd, you don't automatically, because you don't see their faces all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's only media personalities, people whose faces are in our face all the time, that they're instantly recognizable like that. But most other professions.
No, then I'd implore those people to be like late for flights or something. So that your name is called out. And then we can recognize it like, oh, right. Like, Mr. Coca-Cola, please run to, you know, Terminal B. It's like, oh, okay, a Coca-Cola's
around. You're
holding
up the flight now.
Yes. At least then we can be able to know who you are.
But that's not what they want.
They don't want to be recognized.
That's not what they want.
They're not interested in fame.
Yeah, good point. Never mind. Yeah. Not me.
Like Banksy, the artist. That's a good point. That's being made by Matthew.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there are some people who say that they know who Banksy is, but most people wouldn't know him. And he's very famous, and he's probably in the art world the biggest celebrity of all.
Mm.
And yet he doesn't want people to know who he actually is. So some people apparently do know who he is, but most people wouldn't.
I don't know if I buy the whole Banksy thing now.
What do you mean?
What is there to buy?
What if like the real Banksy died ages ago? Oh, it sounds like such a conspiracy.
You mean there's a new one?
Yeah, and this person is just taking the piss out of everything now.
Okay.
So
maybe Banksy's a straight. Face of
yeah.
Mind.
Maybe he's a cultural artifact.
Maybe he's a state of mind, Sia.
Does anybody know? Kais Tolle asks, and he's been on the show a couple of times. He says, is SAA still flying, or is the 2 billion rand dilemma forcing them to stay on the ground? Has anybody booked on SAA recently? If you're listening to us now and you're catching an SAA flight, I'd love to hear. Like, what's going on there? Because I would be very nervous to buy a ticket from them now.
As of a MoneyWeb article released a couple of hours ago, the headline reads, government still looking for 2 billion rands to save SAA. So...
where are they looking? Under rocks? In people's cupboards? Where are they looking?
But they say that flights will remain operational, even though the government is struggling to raise business rescue money. Must be nice.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they're going to find it, because who the hell wants to invest in that croc?
They say, following a meeting with the practitioners at the weekend, the Department of Public Enterprises is engaging with the National Treasury to raise funds for the airline with the post-commencement funding undertaking. So
you really, some things, just like we were talking about languages earlier this morning, some things have to evolve out of existence into extinction.
Extinction isn't even necessary when it comes to business.
It just doesn't succeed. It is an unsuccessful business, and you move on. It's meant to go. Right, exactly. All right, we've got lots of stories going on all over the world. Anything on your agenda that you want to start with this morning?
All right, Gareth.
Anything for you?
Well, can I bring this up? Because I know this will excite you.
Go on.
Russia's making headway into saving our bodies for the time science can bring us back to life.
Oh, fantastic.
But I'd rather
just stay alive the whole way.
Okay. Well, listen, meet science halfway. Like right now, so they can't keep you alive forever. It comes with a hefty price tag, though. The company is called CreoRus, and they currently have patients, in inverted commas, that amount to 71. And these include brains and also just proper corpses that are currently frozen. So they store these different body parts in minus 196 degrees Celsius big tanks. Mm-hmm. And they are protected from deterioration, and although there's currently no evidence, science will be able to revive the dead. So one family who has already put their loved ones in one of these tanks say that they did this because they believe we are very close to resurrecting the dead, and they think that this is the only chance for us to meet in the future. Do you want to know how much this costs?
Sure, go ahead.
Just a cool $36,000 for the whole body.
That's not so bad.
$36,000
for the whole body.
For how long? Is that it? Once off fee?
It's a once off fee.
That's not so bad.
Let's do the
to live forever.
Monster. That's not so bad.
I would
$500,000.
That's so bad.
Everything I have to live forever. I would go into abject poverty if I could live forever, because you can. You talk about future planning. Wow. You got time on your hands, man. When you have time, everything's possible.
So they're hoping for some kind of Demolition Man technology.
Something to come about very, very soon. Or if you can't afford the $500,000 for the whole body, then you can pay $15,000 for the brain alone.
Which will be inserted into what kind of body?
Doesn't matter. Woo.
Do you want to be resurrected or not, Sizpumi? Choose your struggle here.
Don't be choosy here.
Yes.
might end up in the body of a turtle, but...
Yeah, but my point exactly. Do you want to live forever in the body of a turtle?
Well, if you can speak and you have consciousness, might not be so bad.
The body of a turtle.
Who knows?
CreoRus was set up back in 2005, surprisingly. It's the only one of its kind in Russia. It has at least two competitors in the United States, though. And currently, CreoRus, in particular, with its 71 patients, has patients from nearly 20 different countries.
Yeah, and then they end
you
up
know what
all
the best thing about that whole business model is?
Mm-hmm.
So, if you don't deliver...
So what?
Nobody's going to ask for a refund.
Because they're dead.
Because they're all frozen.
The dead have no rights.
Nobody's going to ask for
And imagine
for
if there's load shedding. If there's load shedding and you start to defrost.
Also, nobody is going to ask you for a refund. Like, this is...
That's like religion. When you go to the church and you give them your money, they can't be held responsible one day when you go, well, I didn't get into heaven. Where's my refund? Sorry.
Oh, whoa, there's no heaven.
Yeah. Oops. Anyway, so here's another story, because that's bullshit, this cryogenic thing. So
I'm not interested in it. I think it's a waste of money.
Here's something a little more reasonable. Scientists at the MDI Biological Laboratory, in collaboration with people from the Buck Institute for Research on Aging in California and Nanjing University in China, have identified synergistic cellular pathways for longevity that may amplify lifespans fivefold.
As we currently live.
The increase in lifespan would be the equivalent of a human being living for 500 or 600 years, according to one of the scientists.
So my only thing, right, is I would only want to live forever in a particular age.
Yes,
right?
I agree.
I wouldn't want to be like slowly aging. Even that is not a thing for me. Like, what? Now you're 500 years old and you know, you feel like 500-year-old hip. No.
Imagine imagine that 500 years old.
Yeah, that 500-year-old knee that's been doing the Vosho and whatnot. But if you could live for 500 years mm-hmm. at the age of 32.
Mm-hmm.
But with my 40-year-old brain.
Sure.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, you don't want it to deteriorate.
Good innings you'd be having.
I mean, why deteriorate over 5,000 or 500 years when you can just deteriorate over 50, you know? I mean, no one wants to suffer for 500 years. So you want to be disease-free and you want to be in good physical condition. And it must almost keep you in stasis. So you must be...
Yeah, like if they can keep me at
40.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, like 20, 30, 40, up to maximum 50 is still good.
Yeah.
And then you can keep going for a long time without the aches and pains and, you know, the general deterioration. So this that
actually,
would be amazing.
Maybe if I had like my... 26-year-old body.
You'd prefer that? You see, now you're being greedy. Now you want to go back in time.
It went, the problem with people from 32, now it's down to 26.
I'm thinking about it my 26-year-old body. You know, because the 26-year-old body can still party and all of those wonderful things.
What about...
But my mind...
What would the world look like if you could choose any physical age and any brain age to go with it? So you'd get people in a 4-year-old's body with like... A 40-year-old's brain.
That would be like Stew.
Like Stewie, the Family Guy. You'd have these very, very precocious little children who would actually be 40-year-olds.
Yeah, I don't want a 4-year-old with a runny nose telling me about the theorem of Pythagoras. Nah, go and play in the sandpit.
Imagine. I mean, so you can learn more at age 3 or 4 than you can at any other age. Remember, neuroplasticity. You've got a brain there that's... It's tremendously vital and sucks up every bit of knowledge it can get. Mm. And also, children's bodies are a lot more resilient than the bodies of people that are older.
Yeah, but that's because they're also unsteady. Big heads, plumpy legs.
Yeah.
Ew. Toddler bodies.
Like that. Imagine Pumi at 4 with a 40-year-old brain running around. No. Being extra irritating to all the adults.
Gareth, do they mention how they would perform this procedures like this?
Well, it's reliant on a number of different drugs, apparently. Mm-hmm. By helping to characterize the interactions of these drugs with these pathways, these evolutionary pathways, which they're busy researching at the moment, they're going to use cellular mechanisms which control a synergistic response. That is a subject of a recent paper in online journal Cell. It reports the following, the translational regulation of non-autonomous mitochondrial stress response can promote longevity.
Boom.
It has to do with those little things inside your cell called mitochondria that create all the energy.
Energy.
So if they can figure that out, then... It basically says 1 + 1 will no longer be 2. It'll be 1 + 1 = 5 in terms of how you can extend longevity. I will take it with both hands. People get upset and they say, oh, no, who would want to live forever? Me.
Yeah, me too. Huh. I'd like to live forever.
Go ahead. And this might be surprising for the eternal optimist that I am. I'm not interested. I'm not interested in living forever. You could give me Channing Tatum's body. I am not interested at all. Imagine how ticked off you get in traffic. Now you have to deal with traffic
in 100 years' time.
Listen here.
No, just human beings are annoying. I don't want to stick around.
Have you not watched a single vampire story?
I love that.
Because that's the whole thing about vampires, right? Is they have a particular body at the age when they were turned.
Yes.
But their minds and their life experience.
Oh, they learn everything.
Just keeps growing and growing and growing.
Beautiful.
It's not about how I physically see myself or how I physically feel. No, I'm fine with that. It's just living, man. Living is exhausting.
Chris says, just on the topic of SAA, he flew with SAA last week and they're still professional on time. The lounge is still cozy. I'm due to fly to Swaziland tomorrow with them and my flights are still on track according to the website.
Okay.
I like SAA. Let's just get government out and sell it to someone like Virgin.
Now that's a sexy accent. Sorry, Chris, just to branch off on a tangent. The Swati accent. Ooh.
Joe says, I've had to book on SAA as no one else flies from Cape Town to George in February. I'll let you know if I get there. All right. Lots of other messages. Bulelo, do you want to give us some sport? Because we haven't got to that yet today.
Yeah, let's get to it. This week, what's going on? America's biggest party is in town. The empire has fallen. Of course, Tom Brady and the New England Patriots dynasty is over. For you that like the NFL, they've won 6 Super Bowls. It's unheard of. It's been 18 years of pure domination by the Golden Boy. They are done. But there's a new Golden Boy in town. His name, Patrick Mahomes II. 2nd of February, folks, if you're into it, it is the Super Bowl. They're going to Miami this year. It's America's biggest event, Parnan. It is huge. Those who don't know, probably the biggest concert in America is the halftime show of the Super Bowl, if you're into that. Yes. But I'm more into the sport. Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, they'll take on Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers. History being made. Kyle Shanahan, the head coach of the 49ers, his father won the Super Bowl as a head coach. They are the first father-son coach combination to ever coach in the Super Bowl. So that's a pretty awesome combination there. My pick, Patrick Mahomes. He's got a track team of what they call receivers in the NFL. If you don't like that, the guy to watch, Sammy Watkins, absolute burner. And a cool one is that Jimmy Garoppolo once dated a porn star. So he's awesome. He's the quarterback for the 49ers.
Yeah, Good for him.
Yeah, he's very cool. So look out for that second
dated, it was just like...
No. In public, hands...
Hand-holding everything.
Not what the youth might be called vibing. Mm. No. They were dating.
I wouldn't want to ask my significant other how
like
work was like then.
Like a porn star or like a...
No.
Used to be a porn star.
No. She's hot right now, as the kids are saying. She's so hot right now. And he dated her, and he earns $49 million a year, give or take, Jimmy Garoppolo, the quarterback of the San Francisco
49ers. So did he, like, scout her on a video or, like... I have so many questions.
The quarterback in America, especially, I mean, he lives in San Francisco. You know, that is liberal, like, from what I've read, the most liberal place in the world. He's the quarterback. He's more important than the president. These guys, the quarterback is, that makes you the most popular man in America.
And excuse me, he earns $49 million US dollars and he plays for the 49ers.
With endorsements, Jimmy Garoppolo, $49 million.
Nice.
So look out for that.
You can go back to sport now without our tangents.
Our tangents are so important. They give color to the story.
And some porn stars and the salaries. Yes.
So as I said, Patrick Mahomes is second. Look out for him. He's the next thing taking over from Tom Brady. In the cricket... The Proteas are the worst we have ever been since readmission, right? Nobody should act shocked either. We've been on this spiral for the last 4 years. South African batting has been on honeymoon for 4.5 years because we had the 4 greatest bowlers of this generation. Steyn, Morkel, Rabada and Philander. Our batting has been a joke. It has been an absolute joke, and now they're being exposed. Listen to this. The Proteas went to St. George's in Port Elizabeth and lost by an innings and 53 runs. Listen, Gareth, that's the equivalent, says Pumi, of me losing an arm wrestling competition to a newborn baby. That's what's happened there. That's how much they've beaten us by.
How embarrassing.
That's how ridiculous it is to lose by an innings. England batted once, and they beat us well within 5 days. So Rabada suspended for the last test. He's our best bowler. He's the new guy. He's one of the greatest in the world, and he is suspended for the last test, so it is not looking good. It is an absolute mess with the Proteas. And I've got to say it again, Ben Karpinski was in here on Friday, and I told him Faf du Plessis has to go, and he has to go now. He gives us nothing, zero leadership, barely can bat. Get out of here, Faf. SA cricket, let's move on.
Bulelo, I need to understand this, like, what can we call it? Like this little spat.
Let's hear it.
With Rabada.
Mm-hmm.
What's the problem? What's going on there?
You know what? It's happening everywhere. They're trying to clean up sport so much, right? It's this notion that, and I have to say, I've always disagreed with the notion that sportsmen should be role models. It's absolute nonsense. They won a genetic lottery. Let these animals play.
Mm-hmm.
But he went and basically celebrated a little bit exuberantly. Like, it wasn't even like he was in the guy's face or swearing. I mean, the guy is representing his country. He's our fast bowler. So fast bowlers are usually aggressive. And he got their best batsman and captain out. And he was like extremely exuberant. And that's it. That's all he did. The ICC are an absolute joke. So they're trying to clean up sport because they want people to behave in a certain way, like robots, you know? So he should have no emotion. And it was, it's disgusting. It's PC to the limit.
They're victimizing.
Okay, so
ridiculous.
So the soccer players are allowed to have like a full like 30-second like
mating
dance
ritual.
And
yeah.
Right?
No, you must.
And he's not allowed to like just like go. Yes.
No, you must remember, cricket is, this is how you celebrate. And in football, it's the working class ballet. We've discussed this before. Football is the working man's sport. You, apples
no,
and pears.
I'm trying to understand.
No, right.
I'm just, I'm, you know, I'm trying to be good at on the touchlines there in all these sports like events. I need to
not
display
Rabada
the
done
appropriate
nothing.
Kind of.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a reason to give a shit.
Rabada's done nothing. Let's just call it the ICC or joke. Dave Richardson, be ashamed.
Speaking of the NFL. According to one of the messages from Cucho here, how crazy was that Aaron Henderson documentary on Netflix?
No,
I haven't seen it.
His name's Aaron Hernandez.
Hernandez.
Yeah.
Should I watch it?
So look, he was, it's quite a story, right? So this dynasty I told you that just ended, he was a part of that setup. So the New England Patriots. And then some stuff happened and this documentary, I don't want to spoil it for anyone. It is a must watch to see how a man was, he was trapped in... Yeah, he was trapped like in his body, and he had certain things that you can't display as a machismo. I mean, he was one of the best sportsmen in the world. No, I mean, it's a highly you think of how many guys are definitely, you know, it's been revealed gay in NFL, these highly machismo sports.
Well, they said
guys,
he had a gay lover.
You know, it came out. Yeah, yeah, and he couldn't reveal this, and he comes from a
is
gangster
it true?
Family. Yes, oh yeah. No, it's out.
Hernandez.
Yeah. So CS suddenly finds out that right. May be an opportunity for him to find a rich NFL.
Yeah, but see, he died. No necrophilia here, but let me finish off this. Let me finish off. You got to watch that. Aaron Hernandez. But Gareth, for those of you out there, folks, who love sport, it's the Aussie Open, right? Forget about it. Even if you don't like tennis, don't worry about it. There is an absolute lunatic who's Australian who you got to watch for. His name is Nick Kyrgios.
Oh, no, I've seen. He behaves very badly.
He is the combination. He's a raving lunatic is what he is. Sure. He's like a Tasmanian devil and a three-year-old in one body. This guy is crazy. You don't have to like tennis. Please go and look him up. Even if he doesn't win, he'll make it worth your time. So my pick, once again, it is Novak Djokovic and my dark horse, Daniil Medvedev, Russia's finest of the new youngsters. Are in town. Keep watching, folks. Remember
that. Is that your final? Is that what?
No. I think Medvedev is my dark horse, but my final is definitely Novak and anybody else. I think I probably think Zverev will be in the final versus Novak.
All right.
Mm. Yeah.
That's to think about. Thank you very
much.
That's
it for the sport.
Last sporting question. You did say that you don't care about this, but at the NFL Super Bowl,
yes.
You know, who do you think is going to win between Shakira and J Lo?
God.
Jillian's
saying that the Aaron Hernandez documentary is a must watch, so you've got to watch that, according to her, and lots of other people saying they've seen it and it's brilliant.
Okay.
One other quick thing on SAA is that a lot of people are mixing up Airlink and SAA. They're not the same company. Airlink is not actually even owned in some part by SAA. It's a completely private company. Airlink have uncoupled their booking system even from SAA now. They are a completely separate airline, privately run, and still will be around in February, and that's from Liesl. So Liesl's just letting us know that they're totally different companies.
Okay.
In other words, SAA's disaster is not Airlink's disaster. They're not related. They're not the same. Okay?
Okay.
Good.
Good to know.
Apparently,
so if you're flying to Nelspruit.
Yeah, if you're flying... Yeah. And George, that's also an Airlink route, I think.
And Peter Marisburg.
Correct. Yes, those are the ones. All right, so we're going to meet a man who Mbulelo introduced us to last week. He said that this guy is the inaugural and rightful person for us to first meet on the top spot of Bunch of Winners. His name is David Greer, and he's in studio this morning to tell us about his adventure of a life. There's lots to talk to him about since he's had enough adventure to last about three lifetimes. And we were talking just now about living forever, David, but it doesn't seem like you have to because you're already living.
Lived enough.
Yeah, it seems like you're already living what the rest of us just sit at home and watch on TV. You're actually getting to do.
No, but I was listening to you earlier on and I was thinking, hell, if I could have that
25-30-year-old body and,
yeah.
and the experience that I've had now of adventuring and put the two together. That would be my ultimate.
You'd last forever, man.
Well, it's cool.
A great pleasure to meet you. Tell us a little bit about your background, because Bolelo was singing your praises the other day about all the things that you've done. I think it's also worth mentioning that you're a trustee and ambassador for the SIPLA Miles for Smiles Foundation. A lot of our listeners knew who you were before Bolelo introduced you to us. But you raise funds for Operation Smile, which obviously performs great corrective surgery on kids who are born with cleft lips and palates and helps them in a lot of ways. So it's a great pleasure to actually sit with you and talk to you. How did you end up doing all this interesting stuff? How did you end up with such a full life, and where did it all begin?
It began, I'd been a chef for about 35 years. I had quite a few of my own restaurants, sort of fine dining restaurants from the Eastern Transvaal down into the Cape when I moved back home. And at one stage, I weighed close to 115 kilos.
No way.
Just at the age
You're
of just
big,
over.
Fat man.
Yeah,
really?
I was a big porker. And,
but they say you should never trust a thin chef.
Yeah, I don't
Good
know. I'm cooking at my best now that I'm always hungry and doing something about it. My taste buds are always inspired, and the smells around me sort of excite me more now than I was. So fat and unable to do much. But so at that age, I just thought, hell, I've got to do something about this. And I started running, and I started with 10Ks and then 21Ks, and then I started doing marathons. And then I got into adventure racing. And I found the further I went, the better I became at running. And I'd been in an adventure racing team, and we did quite well in the South African series. It was long ago when adventure racing started. And then I thought, I'd really like to challenge myself in something massive. And China has always intrigued me, and the Great Wall had always intrigued me. So I set out trying to put an adventure together in order to run the Great Wall. And I was rejected time and time again. I took the total wrong route. I tried to do it officially. And I couldn't get anywhere. Whenever I tried to get some department in the Chinese government to do this, to do that, nothing
red
happened.
Red tape everywhere, yeah. Right.
Then, searching on the web, I came up with this guy called William Lindsay. Mm-hmm. And 25 years ago, he'd done this solo journey on the Great Wall. So he started in the east. And it got so hot when he hit the mountains in the Hebei province around Beijing, he had to abort it. Then he traveled all the way to the west, the Gobi Desert, and he started the run again. And then he got to the Shanxi province, a city called Yulin, and he got arrested as a spy. And he was imprisoned in a hotel there. And he was deported. Then he went back to China again, and he started running again, and then he got dysentery. And then he went back home again, and he came back again.
All right, he's clearly mentally ill, this guy.
And this is the guy that inspired you.
Yeah.
I'm just checking.
I thought, this mullet is going to get me there. And I'd sent him, honestly, about 40 emails.
Yeah?
And finally, I got a reply, and he said to me, you are so persistent, I have to answer you. But what you're trying to do, I feel, is impossible, because I've tried myself, and I couldn't do it in one go.
Yeah.
So he said, I'll assist you. And that's where the door of this ultra-adventuring opened. And he put a team together. And in 2006, that's where the journey began. And we managed to do the whole Great Wall, 4,200 kilometers in 98 days, averaging a marathon a day.
But there's some parts of the Great Wall you can't run on.
Yeah, I'd say, look, there's a lot of myth about the Great Wall. You can't see it from space. When that astronaut went up and the Chinese asked him, did you see the Great Wall? He said, no, I was looking out the wrong window. But it's every 500 meters, there's a turret or a tower. And the tower is about 2 meters above the wall. There was a wooden ladder so the soldiers could get into the turret. If someone came, they'd pull the ladder up. So you can't run horses along the wall either.
Mm.
So I'd say 90% of the wall you can't run on. It's only the revamp bits.
So what do you do then? Do you just run next to it?
You run next to it.
Okay.
And, yeah. And 2,000 kilometers of the wall is mud. It's packed mud wall. It's 6-7 meters at the base and about 5 meters high. Ram earth mud wall. 2,000 across the Gobi and Tangier Desert. So, and those walls have been standing. They started building the wall over 2,000 years ago.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
They used 230 million man years to build that wall. I mean,
it's just extraordinary.
It's incredible. And it's and it's rumored for every step you take on the wall, someone perished in the process of building the wall. Oh, wow. Not on the wall itself, but, you know, the support and the families around and all of that. Course. So it's incredible.
Human
structure.
Feat of engineering.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
But when you go, did you go from east to west or west to east?
I went back 14 months ago, 18 months ago, and ran it again in the other direction.
So you've done both?
Yeah, so I'm now the first person in history to run it west to east and east to west.
Amazing.
But what we did on the second run is we wanted to see if we can do it at an ultra a day. So I ran with Andrew Stewart. I've done the last five adventures with. And we averaged 61 kilometers a day for 78. So we did it in 78 days. So we knocked off 20 days.
Unbelievable. You know? What's easier, east to west to east? Obviously, with the ultra part, you must have found the latter.
You know, when you run west to east, you start at 1,500 meters, and you've got about 1,800 kilometers of desert plateaus. Mm. So you get really fit, and you lose a lot of weight. When you start in the east, we had 25 kilometers and straight into the mountains and up to 2,000 meters. So it was so hard the second time round because everything was in reverse and we never had time to get fit. And we took a hammering this time. But we
And you just did it as a tourist. You didn't tell them you were going to do it and go through, because otherwise there's just too much of a nightmare.
Yeah, we did it on tourist visas.
Yeah.
But, you know, talking about China as well, it's that country's intrigued me. And there's so much amazing stuff happening. And we get a perception of China.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I've lived there in villages and on the ground and under bridges for close to a year now on these adventures. And I've met the real folk. I've been into the northwest of China where there are no-go zones. They sign saying aliens not welcome. They call you aliens and you can't sleep in certain villages and whatever. But if I take from 2006 to now, the Green Revolution in China, in, I think, 2017, 2018, they rolled out more solar farms than the US has done in the last 15 years in the northwest.
They've brought more people out of poverty than at any other point in human history. It's just a tremendous
thing. It's amazing to see that side. But to journey there, it's been a privilege. Yeah.
And did you have people with you who could help translate and help you figure out where to stay? And
So you in a country like that, you have a ground crew. Some places we don't, some we do. So the crew they try and intersect you wherever you can meet. So maybe you've a couple of days on your own, a week or longer, and then the crew will intercept you, and then they will have tents, they'll have food, you re-kit whatever you need, change shoes and that, and then off you go again. So you take the shortest possible route, and they intersect you all the time trying to assist you and find places.
I mean, but just besides the amount of time you spent, like the 40 emails and all of that kind of stuff, but putting together a trek like that, what kind of planning, how much planning goes into it? You know, what does it take in terms of planning and budgeting and all of those things?
You know, they say that 95% of all adventures fail. Not on the adventure, but people give up before the first step because it's so hard to do exactly what you're talking about. You know, to get the funds, I've done 10 of these massive world-first adventures now, and I still cannot get funding. It takes me 18 months to 2 years, even longer, 3 years, to get funding for an event. Normally, you have to self-fund, and then you'll get a couple of people along when they see, okay, now they believe you actually are going to do it. So it's so difficult, and it's your passion, your drive, and your belief in getting there that gets you there. With planning, I've learned that you can plan to where you land, where you take your first step, and you plan how to get home after you've taken your last step. What happens in the beginning, you have no control over. You don't even plan it. Just arrive.
You've got to go with the flow.
You have to.
And if it takes you an extra day or two here or there, then you have to just go with it.
Yeah, there's injury. There's.
So how long did you spend in any, you know, single stretch in China? I mean, how long were you there for? Not in total, but because you did go once, that you went again.
And
so you've been there a few times, but I mean, what was the longest stretch?
4 months.
4 months.
Yeah.
Jeez, do you remember what your family looked like after that?
Yeah, you only just remember.
And back here, everybody else is running things and making sure that, you know, in other words, you're not taking a break from life.
No.
You're not completely cutting yourself off.
No, you know, it sounds weird. You basically set up your life that you might not come back. So you
sure.
You make sure that everything's in place and off you go. You know, if you think of these transatlantic rows and you think of Chris Bertish and that on his sailboard and that, I mean, when he kicks off the ocean, you know, it's where the current and wind takes him. And on land, it's a little less. I mean, I did a similar paddle. I paddled from Africa to Madagascar.
Yeah.
And it was when I left the coast.
500 kilometers in 12 days.
Yeah, I thought to myself, you stupid idiot, where are you going? What are you doing?
Everyone who travels says you learn a lot about yourself in traveling. You find yourself in traveling. And what have you learned about yourself in all of these adventures?
You know, that introflection is amazing and it's incredible. And it's that appreciation for everything and everyone that's taken away from you when you embark on these journeys. I mean, your culture, your language, your everything is taken. You're nothing. And you survive on those interactions and those first-time meetings with people you meet along the way. And you learn so much about yourself and the respect for others and how we need each other. It is so important to people to be able to do that. And it changes your whole perception on people around you and that. And how interconnected we are as people. And our first impression of anyone is actually, how can I help you? It's the second thought is normally the dodgy one. So if you always act on that first thought, it's always like you meet someone and think, geez, I want to do something. I want to help you. How can I help you? And then the second thought comes in, then you shy away or you do this or that. But it's you learn so much about that and just appreciate what you have and just appreciate your fitness, your health, your family, your support, those words of encouragement. All the little things mean so much to you in life.
You know, so can you do a normal marathon like the Comrades, which, you know, even I've seen people who, you know, morbidly obese people run the Comrades and some of them obviously don't finish. But is that boring to you compared to all these things you've done?
No, it's not. You know, everything you do, if I want to run a 21K, it's a mental adjustment. I know where I'm going to start and when I'm going to finish. And you go. I mean, I'm a tractor. I plod. I've learned my running's about body maintenance. It's not speed. The faster you go, the more I injure myself.
That's smart.
But it's each thing is as hard. I mean, if I run a marathon, it'll be hard because that's where I set it. If someone moves, I mean, all runners say, if you run 42 and they say, no, you've got to run 45 now, half of you will collapse. You can't do that those last 3Ks, although you can. It's the mindset.
So you've gone up Kilimanjaro. You've done the two oceans a couple of times. You ran the entire length of India, 4,008 kilometers in 93 days.
Yeah, that was mentally probably the hardest run I've ever done. We started in Jammu, Kashmir, at the most northern Hindi temple. It was about 80 Ks from Afghanistan up there. And we came down through that, and it was minus 10 in the beginning. It was freezing cold, and ruptured.
Up in the Hindu Kush.
Yeah, right up. And I'd ruptured my bladder. So I was passing blood in my urine, and I thought I'd had a reoccurrence of bilharzia because I had really bad bilharzia that I picked up in Madagascar. And the guy says, no, you've got to get into a
hospital.
Yeah. So I went into this hospital, and they did a whole lot of blood tests. And they said, look here, they don't know. I must go for a scan.
In the middle of India.
Yeah, I remember going outside down the street and lining up all these pregnant ladies waiting my turn to go in this cubicle for a scan. And I came back to this doctor, and he said, when you looked at the scans, he says, no, he thinks I've got prostate cancer.
Oh, Jesus.
I said, come on, man. I've run 1,000 Ks. Anyway, eventually, I'd actually ruptured my bladder. The bladder had sagged with the cold and running downhill. It was 400 kilometers, and we came down a few thousand meters. And
this would put most people off. Most people at this point would go, you know what? My body's telling me that this running is going to kill it. I'm going to stop. Not you.
Yeah, I did. I don't know
What did you do? So you got the operation?
Well, I went into theater and I came out there feeling a bit violated. And when I share this story, I always say there was the craziest thing was there were these five doctors in jeans and white t-shirts standing in this theater, and there was a table like this black table, just like marble. And one had a glove, and you know, you sort of think, are you going to share that glove, or what's going to happen? But yeah, I came out of that, and it ruptured again again.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I got to the end. But
how long did it take you to get this sorted out before you could carry on?
The next day, I started walking on the road again. Man. Yeah, And then some of the crew, Andrew. That's how I started running with Andy. He was in crew. He was a crew. Then he says, "No, bro, I'm gonna join you on the road." And he helped me so much. And I used to do quite a bit on my own. And from then I learned, you want to do it with someone. You want to share it. You want that hand to be there to pull you back. And it was an amazing experience.
It is amazing. But you're
what? Hold up. So like, what actually happens in your mind when you come out of theater and you as harrowing an experience as the theater experience was, and the next morning you get up and you walk down this road?
You know, the answer to that came actually from this China run from Andrew. It's in you. It's we'd made a promise before we left to people we might never meet, but we made a promise we're going to assist them, we're going to change their lives. And Andy got a bad injury in China, and we wanted to can everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually came out of a hospital on crutches. He had such bad tendonitis that his ankle had seized.
Oh my God.
With a moon boot. And we'd only done, 800 Ks. And Andy sat there, and we stopped for 3 days, and he said, "There is no ways we're giving up. We can't let these people down that have believed in us. We're gonna get there." And it was a similar thing. You walk out of that theater and you think, you know what? It's not about me. It's about that promise I made to those kids out there, the people that believe me, the people that have got me here. And it's, you know, it's not about us. We're messengers. We're sharing what can be done in this country. We're sharing amazing self-belief and inspiration and hope for everyone out there. Because, you know, if I look at now what we're doing, there's so many amazing innovative stuff we're doing, and we're doing so much social innovation out there that are changing the landscape in many sectors across South Africa, and we're quietly doing it, and it's we don't want to stop that. We don't want to let people down, and we're bearing the fruits of that, and that's what drives us and makes you take that next step. If it was for me, I would have failed.
I'm curious also about how you treat the travel part of this, because it's not a conventional, you know, people buy an airline ticket and go and see a temple or whatever. Here you're running through it. Do you stop and take a look at certain things along the way? Do you make sure you plot an interesting course that'll take you through places that you really want to see? What kinds of stuff were you most interested in interacting with, engaging with, seeing, experiencing?
So that seems to and always evolves on its own, because you plot a route,
yeah,
and you want to get from this side of a country to that side, and off you go.
Yeah.
But along the way, what unfolds is so amazing. It's actually the best way to do it is that surprise element. You'll come through a mountain range, and here's this most beautiful valley and this village and people you've never heard of. And you know, from a chef's perspective, food, and you end up in the middle of this feast and this ritual, and you just get washed up in it, and you might spend an extra day with these guys.
It's amazing. And you do cook, and you do partake in the local food and all of that stuff.
Yeah, in India, there'd be these massive weddings, and there'd be these huge pots. They're cooking ghee rice on the road, and I was there cooking rice for this wedding. We got invited to weddings. We were guests of honor at the main table next to the bride in our dirty running gear.
That's amazing.
We've had, I mean, in Madagascar, I was cooking fruit bats at some guy's house, and we ate tree boa constrictor they'd cooked in the fire. Locusts, they take sisal, and it's got this little thorn, and you pull it, and it's like a long thread.
Yeah.
And they thread all the locusts onto this thread, and they crunch salt in it, and then they cook it over the coals, and you eat these crunchy locusts, and it's stuff we've
eaten. That is crazy. Yeah, boa constrictor can't taste nice.
It's and white also, puffy like, meat that's like it's like crocodile and creof all mixed up.
God, how disgusting.
But also it's so unexpected, because it's like I think, ooh, these guys, they're on this ultra marathon, 60 kilometers a day, you've got to, you know, carb load and do eat special things and watch out for. And here you are, just from wedding, from ghee rice, like ghee rice, really.
No, you eat anything, and you find it. And sometimes you eat stuff. We saw this fruit stand, and they were making the most beautiful fruit shakes. They had pineapples, bananas, granada, everything.
Where was this?
In India.
Okay.
And we were just craving for this. And then he took ice and he crushed it in. That's a problem. Never, ever take ice. We then saw ice plants later on. It's these huge, like steel platforms with steel cubes, and the water runs in there, and guys are walking over this barefoot and sweating and dripping in this ice, and they're closing up all the ice and settling it.
Oh,
so basically, this is
so the ice is where the disease comes
that's
from.
Where it comes. We got so sick. Hamish, who was crew with us, we flew him back. He had this intestinal infection. It took him about 4 or 5 weeks to recover from it. Within an hour afterwards, we were lying over this fence, and there was whatever coming out wherever it could.
Oh,
it was,
my God. Wow.
That Deli Belly Deluxe.
Jesus. And were you able to cook for them, I mean, in terms of showing them some of your things? Because you're a chef, so they must have been curious.
You'll go into people's homes, and you'll cook something, but it'll be whatever ingredients you find. And,
sure.
And even as crew, the amazing thing is we're sort of a hunter-gatherer. You get together what you can, and we all say we're going to meet at a campsite that evening, and then we'll all cook together whatever we found.
Well, you've got a business and a company called I Like That, right? You manufacture food products for the international market, and apparently we can find your stuff in like 10 countries globally.
Yeah, so I've pulled out of that now.
You're not involved?
Yeah, I'm not involved in that anymore. Okay. Yeah, I've stuck mainly to my adventuring and
you could do this full time.
No.
What do you do the rest of the time?
The rest of the time I write books and I share my stories in the corporate market and then working with the foundation takes up a lot of my time. So you got to do lots of things. I do a bit of food consulting, and you know, I've got a sort of a portfolio of jobs to keep myself. Yeah,
sounds like you're pretty busy.
Yeah, you got to try.
I have a
question
about Cuba.
Yes, Guantanamo Bay.
That was a special trip. It was still before Cuba opened up, and it was a funny trip. We arrived in Cuba. So there's what we arrived in Cuba. And we had this Facebook competition for a photographer, because we couldn't find a photographer, we couldn't find sponsorship, but we got a flight ticket, so we couldn't pay someone. So this guy wins the competition. He said, like, amazing, 1.5 month holiday to Cuba. All you got to do is take pictures and that. And we arrive in Cuba. Now we got nothing, no place to stay, no car, nothing. Eventually, we found a rental. This car was minute. I mean, Andy's tall. He's over 6 foot. He was lying in the back, all the gear with his feet out of this window. So we had to drive from Havana down to Guantanamo. And we thought it would, 1,000 Ks down from where we were, I thought, it'll take like a day. 4 days later, we're still driving. The roads are non-existent.
Wow.
So we get to Guantanamo, to the last village, only to find out that the lighthouse we were to start from was 15 Ks away, and it was through a military coffee plantation.
Wow.
Jesus. So we left Pete in the crew vehicle, and we crept through this coffee plantation to the lighthouse, and then we ran back. So we'd done an extra like 15 Ks before the start. And we decided to go to the East Coast. Second night, we get arrested.
Oh, no.
And we were told by the military, you can't camp. So I thought, okay. So anyway, carried on. Then we ended in the city called Mao, which is their industrial hub, where they do a lot of military stuff. And bang, we get arrested again.
Yeah.
Called camping again. And we couldn't work this out. And then we found, about 100 Ks further, we found a village. And they said, no, we could sleep there. And then that was it. Bang. The military came. They locked us up in a guest house. Then they drove us 90 kilometers to a city called Holguin, where the military central intelligence was there, and they interrogated us for 4 hours. And the guy took us one at a time, and he said, I'm going to interrogate all four of you. If any of these statements differ, we're going to lock you up for 18 months. Jeez. So they interrogate us all, and I look, and he says, okay, I'm going to sign this thing. And I look at it, but it's in Spanish. I said, I don't know what you've written there. I'm not going to sign it. He says, listen here, If you don't sign it, I'm going to lock you up. If I don't like it, I'm going to lock you up, so sign it.
Wow, you didn't have much option, huh?
We didn't have much option. So anyway, then they let us go, gave us back our passports, but every night we had to report into the military, and we had to stay in special accredited places where we could stay. But it was an amazing country. The vibe on Cuba, the buildings, the cars, the people, the food. I always say to people, go to Cuba as soon as you can. It's special. It was amazing. And you know, when we were in Cuba, Madiba passed away, and a lot of the Cubans now had heard about these two South Africans running the country. People would run out in the villages and like commiserate with us, and everywhere there were flags flying half mast. They were saying, "No, we're sorry, we hear your president passed away." And it was amazing, and that vibe on the island was unbelievable. And then we got to the north, to Vinales, to the main cigar farming area, and rolling the cigars, and but the scenery, it's beautiful, that country, beautiful.
Sounds amazing. Where do you want to go next?
I've got two things planned. I've got my biggest journey ever planned for 2021.
Yeah.
It'll be in China. The Yangtze River from source to sea. We want to journey that. We want to run it, swim it, paddle it, sail it, whatever. It's 6,500 Ks, and we want to link an angle too of the climate change and actually how the Yangtze River has been regenerated. The river was nearly dead, and it's been regenerated, and amazing things are happening there. And we want to coincide that with the Chinese Winter Olympics, which is in 2022. So just do a nice story about what's happening there, and so we're looking at doing that.
So back to China again.
Yeah, but in October we're running from Namibia to Cape Town. We're going to do that journey, 20 marathons in 20 days to put 20 kids through surgery. So we're doing the 2020 with that. So it'll be a warm up run for that.
Well, David, you're not having a boring time, huh?
No. Last week,
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very inspiring. A lot of people sending messages here. Someone here says that they're so proud of you and the work you do. That's Natasha. Someone says, don't forget that all of this stuff is being done in one lifetime. You don't need to live for 500 years. Yeah. All right. Very nice. But David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks
this morning,
a lot.
David Greer. And Mbulelo, thanks for introducing us to him.
We will
have more on the bunch of winners in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we'll have a great guy who's doing great things in Europe next week. Look out for that. He is, let's say, in the arts and doing massive things, a Pavarotti of our time.
Very nice.
South African, yeah.
Well, David, thanks. Are you running home or are you going to use
transport? No. I'm actually up here. We're putting up four medical little clinics up in Soweto and Hillbrow now. So the one project we're doing, we're putting up chronic med collection points to help the clinics decant well patients out of the units. We'll be rolling out 50 by the end of July.
That's phenomenal.
And on a yearly basis, we hope to be handing over nearly 2 million patient parcels. So you can imagine 2 million people we're assisting to decant out of clinics. So that's a big project we're doing. Amazing. So we're up here to do that, rolling those out. Yeah.
Yeah, and congratulations too on all the stuff that you've done in that area.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was great meeting
you. What a pleasure to meet you too. Very inspiring human being.
Thanks.
All right, it's just before 8 o'clock. Thank you for joining us. We will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early. CliffCentral.com.